Our periods are exactly what we're about to be talking about here on RTR FM. We're turning a little a funnier lens to them this morning than they usually are approached with. But 1 in 10 people in Australia are living with endometriosis. It's a condition that's, or a disease rather, that's means that tissue similar to the lining of the uterus grows outside of the uterus. It can cause massive pain in the pelvis, make it harder to get pregnant, and overall just massively affect your quality of life. I know from the people in my own life that it's often hard to talk about and it's often misdiagnosed. But people all around the country, and 1 in 10 people in Australia with uteruses, are suffering. And there are people all around the country working to care for them, support them, and, you know, look at the treatments that they can find. Endo Days is a new book that's been published by Wakefield Press. It's by Wakefield Press, a comedian, cabaret performer and teacher, Libby Traynor Parker. She's retaliating against finally being diagnosed with the incurable condition endometriosis after 22 years of medical gaslighting and medical misdiagnoses. Libby Traynor Parker is a comedian, a journalist, a teacher, a radio presenter, just like me, and a cabaret performer. Endo Days, the show, debuted at Adelaide Fringe and it ran for 4 seasons. She's been on the Pelvic Pain Foundation of Australia board. She's worked on the Australian Coalition for Endometriosis and advising on the National Action Plan for Endometriosis. Lots of things under her belt. She's an endo master is really what's happening here. But Endo Days, the book, threads the story of Libby's life through endometriosis with interviews with a range of endo friends across Australia, experiencing or centering rather the experiences of trans, queer, neurodivergent, younger, older, First Nations, metropolitan and rural Australians experiencing endometriosis. On Breakfast to talk a little bit more about her new book, Endo Days, and everything else. Good morning, Libby Traynor Parker.
Good morning. Gosh, it sounds so exhausting when you say all the things I do.
It's a lot of stuff. There's a big resume there, but it definitely is all with the focus of, you know, looking at endometriosis, which is important and exciting and feels like, you know, this maybe is your thesis, your seminal thesis. You've put out this book and it really is this testament to all of that crazy work that you do. So it's exciting.
I didn't know what else to do, to be honest. When I was diagnosed, I didn't know what else to do. It just seemed like, you know, I was thrown this diagnosis. It was incurable. And it was like, well, that's a word that now describes everything you've been going through for so long. What are you going to do with it? Being a teacher by trade, it's kind of in my DNA to impart knowledge. And because also, you know, young people talk about this stuff, like young girls, we talk about bodies. And I thought all these conversations start in high school. So I got together with Pelvic Pain Foundation and we wrote Pep Talk, which is Periods, Pain, Endometriosis Program. And that's gone national with state and federal government funding. So I thought, okay, well, what's next? As I wrote a cabaret show.
Yeah, it definitely isn't. I don't think it would be everyone's next step to, oh, I've got an incurable diagnosis, let me write a fringe show. Like, I don't know if that's everyone's next step, but it was yours, and, well, you know, all the more grateful for it. I want to talk a little bit more about the program that you did roll out across the schools because it touched on endometriosis a little bit, and I think it is important that people know that that's happening and it is centralised as something that gets covered in schools, but we'll get to that in a moment. The cabaret show is how we started off with Endo Days, right? So that's painting the picture. That's the umbrella that Endo Days lived under. When you started making this cabaret show, how did you go about trying to make something like endometriosis, which is so serious, have a comedic or more personable aspect to it?
Well, my husband is a musician, and it was just actually after the first pregnancy loss that we had, and that was the first of 11 pregnancy losses with no surviving pregnancies at all. And we had this first one, and I had to have cesarean surgery to remove it. And so we had a lot of downtime because I had a long recovery. And so we watched a lot of telly, and we used to laugh because we're both performers. We both love going to Fringe, and we love parodies. And so we started joking about things because, you know, humour is a really good way of kind of diffusing a difficult situation, and that's how we cope. So we started joking about, you know, fringe shows that we could do and songs that we could do, and it was a few shows later, as we did Box Set Blues, which was about watching binge watching TV, but back before streaming services. And one night we thought, why don't we do a show about endometriosis? There's so many people with it, and we feel like we could make it educational, we could make it fun, and we'd come up with some stupid songs, you know, like parodying I See Red by Split Ends. And, you know, all the Doctor, the Bad Case of Loving You. You know, like we'd had all these fun songs that we'd just thought up in the kitchen. So we put that into a show, and then we actually got funding to redevelop the show with original songs. So we thought, yeah, we can really tell our stories through original songs, and Matt is a wonderful singer-songwriter, and I write stupid lyrics. So, yeah, well, that's what we did, and it just evolved, and we were just blown away by the reception that it got, that we thought, oh, no one's going to come to this, you know, but it'll be fun if some of our friends and family come along. And the first show sold out, standing room only. We only did one show, and then we went, oh, gosh, this is a thing. So then the following year we did 10 shows, and they sold out. And the following year, 10 shows, they sold out. And we went, oh, gosh, this is a like people want to see their own experiences and laugh about it and have community and feel seen and acknowledged and validated. And that's what it brings people, it's community.
It definitely is community, and we see community in the book too. Obviously, turning a fringe show into something that, you know, is readable and you can hold in your hands, that isn't an hour with silly fun songs. And as much as I imagine that if you wanted to, you could have made the book one of those fold-out cards where you press the button and it's got one of those songs in it. That would be brilliant, but it's not that. The book, you know, does feature a lot of hilarity, but it also centres some really important stories. How did you go about, you know, wanting to make this book and put it together in the way that you have? What was important to you when you started to consider the book?
Well, I was actually approached by Wakefield Press to write it, and they came to me and said, hey, listen, we've read some of the stuff that you've written, articles and blogs, and they'd seen my shows, and said, do you think you could write something long form? And I said, well, how hard could that be? And it turns out it's really hard. But I wanted it to be educational without preaching, because I'm not a doctor and I only can talk from my own experience. But I wanted to tell stories of those who don't have their voices heard very often. And I work with a lot of gynecologists and specialists and health practitioners when I was on the board of PPFA and also with ACE. And I wanted to talk to patients because I think that as wonderful as health practitioners are, they can't know everything. And there are a lot more experiences than just, you know, a woman who identifies as a woman coming in with gynecological issues. You know, there's also trans people. There's also First Nations people for whom, and other cultures as well, for whom it's taboo. And it can be really difficult to talk about it and also to seek medical assistance. So, yeah, it was important to me to tell these stories sensitively. It took a long time as well, and I wanted to get it right, and I hope I did, and I hope I you know, did some justice to these people who were so incredibly generous with their time. Because I identify as a woman, I have no idea what it's like to not want a uterus in my body and have this pain and have this condition and go into a doctor and have that, you know, that body dysmorphia going on, as well as chronic pelvic pain. So to hear those stories is just, like, it blew me away. And I thought, gosh, I've got it easy.
Yeah, it's important to centre those stories too in the narrative, include them in what we consider this to be often, yeah, a woman's issue, where really it's an issue for anyone that was assigned female at birth or has a uterus, you know, and it has to be far further reaching than it just being a woman. We mentioned previously, but you worked with Pelvic Pain Foundation of Australia to deliver PPET, which is Periods, Pain and Endometriosis Program, which has been coming across schools, which also really centres the ability to talk about this. Why do you think it's important that programs like this come across schools and books like this centre this conversation? Why is it something that we should be talking about? Why should endometriosis be in the headlines?
Because we're told that pain is normal. Because the words period pain are put together and that's considered normal, where it actually should be period cramps, and pain is not normal. That if you're having pain that is making you take time off school, that is interrupting your life, that is forcing you to not be able to be intimate with a partner. And so, there's trauma attached with that too, that we need to separate period pain, period cramps, and understand when something is wrong and when we should be seeking help. And we are told a lot, that's a woman's lot, or, it's just period pain, or, suck it up, take a Panadol, have some aphrodisiac, off you go, get moving. And I was told that too when I was a kid, because my mother had terrible pain, and she hasn't been diagnosed with endometriosis, but we're pretty sure she would have it. My sister has been diagnosed, and my grandmother, so my mum's mum, she died at 52 with heart failure. She had an addiction to painkillers. So I think we can safely imagine that she would have been living in pain. So the idea that we carry this load, that if we're born with a uterus, then we have, that's our cross to bear, is unacceptable. And we get dismissed so often. I was often told it was all in my head. When I first collapsed with pain, and I was sent to a hospital, and they whipped out my appendix, and they said, "Oh, we just took out a perfectly healthy appendix." And I said, "Well, what's wrong with me?" And the doctor said, "Well, I think you've just got your knickers in a twist."
Oh dear. And
that I think was the trigger for me telling that story. That's the name of the first chapter of the book, is knickers in a twist, because that's the kind of thing that I was told for 22 years. And we call it misdiagnosis a lot of the time, because we're just told that that's our lot. So just having medically informed and correct information instead of just get on with it, get moving, you'll be all right, lose weight.
Yeah, a lot of that information is in the book, and it's really exciting to see it all put together. But it's sort of, chaptered or bookmarked or segmented by lots of stories from around the country, from all different endo friends, or so, as you've called them. Very exciting to see. What are some of your favourite stories, or what's one of your favourite stories that stands out to you when you're thinking about the book?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question, because I did talk to so many. There's a lot of them that were pretty heartbreaking, actually. There's a woman who went to a hospital in, I think, Nam, and she was treated quite poorly because she's an Aboriginal person. So that stands out to me. Oh, that's a really good question now that I'm thinking about it.
It's hard when I put you on the spot now as well. I feel like it's like, oh, no. But,
choosing a favourite. Oh, my goodness. I can't choose a favourite.
It's like choosing a child. Yeah. Now, you have done a lot of work in the consultancy of what's going on around the country in regards to endometriosis too. And since the release of the National Action Plan for Endometriosis, we've seen 87.19 million committed to research and awareness and education and clinical management and care. What are you hoping to see come out of that? Is there something that you're waiting for to happen across the country as somebody who not only experiences endometriosis but is well versed in what's needed around the country after tapping into all these stories? Is there something you're waiting to see happen?
Money is a good start. It is a good start.
Yeah.
A lot of us, we feel like, it would be good if this was mainstream. It would be good if we, stopped being turned away. And it would be good if it was the focus. But I think that the main thing for me, what I want to see, is people with endometriosis not having to fight their own battle. Because when it comes to EndoMarch, which is the Endometriosis Awareness Month, it's us putting on our own high tees. It's us raising money. It's us, having an event and donating to charity. We're working our guts out to try and raise awareness for our own illness. And you don't see that with a lot of conditions, particularly with such a high incidence. One in nine people who menstruate have endometriosis, and that's massive. And yet it's us who are, running our gala dinners and running ourselves into the ground trying to fight for our own illness. And I would like to see somebody else take that off us.
Yeah.
And help raise awareness. I want someone else to fly the flag. I want our male-identifying people to get out there and start doing it, because, gosh, it impacts them so much. you know, they're our partners, our parents, our colleagues, our bosses, and quite often our champions, because they're the ones that say, oh, your period pain's a little bit different to my ex-girlfriend or my sister or my mum. And so they can be the ones that force, you know, send us to go and get diagnosed. So I want to see change in that, you know, these people who are very sick are fighting the battle with just getting up every day and also trying to raise money and awareness.
Yeah, they're doing it all, and you're doing it all, and we'd like to see a little bit more change. But yes, you are right, money is a good start. Thank you so much for joining us here on Breakfast on Aotearoa FM. It's been a pleasure to talk all things endometriosis with you. I'm excited to, you know, for people to get their hands on this book. It's a really wonderful one. You can get your hands on it at all good bookstores. It's via Wake or via Wakefield Press. Libby Trainer Parker, thanks so much for hanging out with me on Breakfast this morning.
Thanks for having me. Had a great time.
Libby Trainer Parker joining me all the way from the Eastern States to talk all about her new book, Endometriosis, but Endo Days is the name of the book. You can find it wherever you get good books.